listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Host, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right in. We have a returning guest, Miss Jadina Bergstrom, or Jadina. I should just call you Jadina, right?
I always heard that when you want to make an entrance, you use your first and your last name. So you can
okay. Use both. Perfect. I like it. You look very nice. You know, you're the best dressed guest we've had on Wake Up Hollywood. So,
Wow. Well, thank you.
You got some fringe. You're like, I got some feathers.
Got some feathers. It's a little bit cooler than normal in Los Angeles, so wanted to stay warm.
You know what's funny? It's like it looks like it's always sunny and it's warm, but during the winter, it's cold in LA. It's deceivingly cold.
It's not warm right now.
Yes. This is.
I may have a blanket that I'm wrapped up in to stay warm.
That's awesome. So. You have been singing your whole life. You've been playing in various styles. You've been doing blues music. You've been doing pop music. You've been doing everything in between. Tell us what are you working on now? Or like what's your writing process? Like, do you kind of like listen to what's happening in pop and kind of let that kind of take you over? Or are you kind of all over the map as to what grabs you and inspires you?
So my best friend said to me, but first, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back. My best friend said to me the other day, what I admire about you, G, is your willingness to be transparent about whatever you're going through and to just share openly. And so I feel like whatever limiting belief or whatever breakdown or whatever thing I'm growing through tends to be the topic of what I'm writing. Recently, I have been made keenly aware of what's happening in Iran and Ukraine.
Yep.
And our brothers and sisters in both of those countries are really going through quite the struggle. In Ukraine right now, there's no power and there are no lights. So it's literally cold and dark. And writing music that speaks to those of us that don't have any idea what's happening over there. And then in Iran, women are being killed for singing, using their voice. So, you know, Mahsa Amini and different journalists and Evin University or Evin Prison. There's a lot of different things that are happening across the world right now that could use some music.
Yes, amen.
So yeah, that's the current landscape, like literally in the last couple of weeks.
So do you write like kind of as a voice for those issues, or do you kind of just take in what's happening and you just channel it into something else that is a healing song for you and for others?
Well, it's been a bit of a different process recently. What I've noticed and seen is that the stories of what's happening in those countries aren't something that I've personally experienced.
Right.
So to sit on a soapbox and pretend like I know or could sing or could lend my voice to, in a way, it feels silly.
Right.
So what I can say is I'm listening. I'm here. And as generic and as simple of communication through song that I can find,
you know what kills me about especially the Ukraine situation, it's like you see this footage of kids, like no kid should live through war. Like that's just like, I mean, it's so crazy to see these kids living in bunker shelters and like playing with toys, whatever toys they could grab before they left. And it just, that breaks my heart. I'm like, no kid needs to deal with these adult issues that should never have even come to the surface like this, you know, with Putin just doing what he did, you know. So I always think of the kids, you know. It's like I feel like they need more of a voice because no one's going to write from their perspective, you know.
Yeah, no one's going to speak for them, and they're not going to be heard.
Right.
I also think about myself as like a little girl singing in my bedroom or in talent shows, and never once has it ever crossed my mind like, oh, I'm going to be arrested for singing. Like, not ever once. Or I'm going to be killed for singing as a woman. And like, to think that there are women, teenage girls, little girls that are literally being murdered for choosing to use their voice to sing. Like, being in the room with women from Iran who have literally escaped their country and are singers, and being in the room with them, I'm just like, how can I witness and hold space? How can I support? And sometimes it's not being the singer. Sometimes it's being the writer and being the wordsmith and being the oohs and the ahs behind their stories. So that's been what I've been up to recently.
That's amazing. So that's definitely not like your average LA story, because most people are too caught up in making sure they stay on the line of the haves and not think about the have nots. So that's very compassionate of you. And I totally respect that. That's pretty awesome. I hope you continue to write for those kind of issues. I think that's real music. And I love when real music is out there, because it's what I look for and live for, you know?
Yeah. A few years ago when I started Fourth Door Records, I had like an epiphany, aha moment of, I had been making music as a cathartic experience for myself, and probably some revenge music in there somewhere against some ex-boyfriend.
It happens to all of us.
And after going through some emotional intelligence work, I realized like I have so many different skill sets and can actually support other artists. And in that process, I had one of the most profound moments of my life when I signed 3 letters of intent with 3 artists that I respect and admire. And I just remember that moment as one of the most humbling, profound moments of my life. And I've sang in a lot of different places. I've written a lot of different songs and performed all over. And honestly, to date, like there are very few things that compare to that moment of actually being somebody that could be in service to somebody else's vision. And it actually changed the trajectory of all of the music that I make, why I make music, where I make music from. It's all for the listener. It's all for and in support of other artists. And ultimately, I'll always love making music and being an artist, and I won't ever stop doing that. But my why and my bigger vision for this planet is to make music that impacts the inner child in all of us and ignites and puts a flame. Yeah, ignites their vision and their own why on this planet, not only being able to have them, you know, meaning the human population, wake up in the morning and journal and do gratitude lists and then put on this music and be inspired by it, but also have them use their own voice and sing. So it's really a different come from these days for me, and why I'm in this world.
Isn't it interesting how like your reason for writing changes as you get older and also maybe wiser, and also that you care less about the trends and you care more about the content and why you are an artist? Because I find that with myself, it's like, I'll always write love songs. It's just a part of, I just think love songs are great, and even hurt love songs, whatever it is. But I find that my favorite songs are the ones that are speaking for the voiceless, you know, or listening to stories of the tormented and the victimized, and trying to kind of channel some of that into music and make something meaningful and potent. Because, you know, life happens once, and that, you know, like, I'm not in my 20s anymore, and so like the issues become more real. Like watching the news and just seeing what's happening in the world becomes way more relevant than it was in my 20s. Do you feel that way? Are you kind of drawing from what's happening in the media? Are you drawing from what you're reading online? Or how do you kind of get your inspiration to write?
I would say that I go based off of what's happening in my life, right, and what I'm being exposed to. And just recently I've been so exposed to the Iranian culture and what's happening there. And that's just lit a spark up within me to work on that. But the attention span of people is like 8 seconds. It's less than a goldfish.
It's less than that. It's like 2 seconds.
Yeah, it's super, like, it's ridiculous. And
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What?
Yeah, what'd you say? Say it again. So there's just a part of me that's like, I'm not going to stop making music. And I'm also not going to pretend that I can be the voice of every single, you know, thing that's happening in the world all at once. So I find what moves me, and it tends to be things that that are beautiful. And there's beauty in pain, there's beauty in growing, and also that there's that sometimes it's like when people think things are impossible, I'm gonna pick the thing that people think is impossible, and I'm gonna go for that
because awesome.
Somebody gets to, right. Like it's been 44 years. This Iranian regime has been a part of their country. Why isn't it possible?
I remember, you know, I've got a couple friends that are Iranian, and one of them said that you could get arrested for playing rock and roll in the 80s. You could get arrested just for listening to rock mm-hmm. and roll music. Mm-hmm. And he said he would have to start bands, and they would have to meet like secretly in basement.
Underground.
Yeah, underground. And it's like, we take that for granted, just going to a rehearsal space and just rocking with friends and letting it be what it is. And yet in other countries, they have this regime that's like preventing freedom, you know, on a creative level. It's like not even like on a life level, it's like on a creative level. Like, you should never dictate what an artist can say or do, and or anybody else. But I mean, really, art is that expression that should always be, you know, candid and free. And it's really strange, because I don't even understand what the control is for. It's like super neurotic. So I love that you're writing in that. Last time you came on the show, we talked a little bit about like what was the moment of zen of you wanting to do music. And I think you said your father was a big inspiration to the music you were listening to. Do you remember the moment of zen that you really wanted to be a singer?
Moment of zen. I'm not sure I've ever heard it qualified in that way. But I can pretty much guarantee you, first time I was sat down in front of the Little Mermaid,
you're like, that's it.
I'm like, that's me. I don't have red hair, but I do have a tail, and that's me. Like, I forever will be Ariel. And my dad was a big surfer, so he was always King Triton, and mermaids were always a part of my world, pun intended. And yeah, I mean, it came out in 89, and I was a very, very small human at that time. And so, and I have a really great memory. So I remember all of it. And yeah, music from that moment on. I also, my dad played classical music for me in the crib as a baby. So I was constantly surrounded by music.
And I don't think did he play guitar? I can't remember if you told me that. So like, how did you get into blues? Like, that's kind of like how I got to know you.
Yeah.
You were doing a lot of blues at the time. And how did you get into that scene?
So, I had been performing on the street in Santa Cruz, just like with a boombox and singing over the artists, performing like
"Oops, awesome.
I Did It Again" and like Whitney Houston, "I Will Always Love You" and Celine Dion, and then ultimately it turned into karaoke tracks. And as I got, you know, more and more into it, I mean, I was making hundreds and hundreds of dollars per hour just performing on the street without a permit and my dad just being bodyguard. I got more and more confidence around singing at different things. And as I mentioned, the mermaid part of it, I was surfing. So I would go to these contests and I would win the surf contest and then sing at the award ceremony a cappella. I was never with a band or anything, but I would just surf and then sing, surf and then sing, surf and then sing. And I met this group of gals. This is a very long story. I met this group of gals called Las Amigas Del Mar. And having not been raised by my mom, I was always looking for different women to mentor and to be around. And I met these gals who were all these like, you know, women who were just learning to surf that loved the surf community that didn't really have anybody, but they all came together. I think they met on like an AOL group or something. It was a Yahoo group called Las Amigas Del Mar. Anyway, I became a part of their group as like the youngest member. And one of the gals who to this day is like a mentor angel of mine in my life, her husband and her loved blues music. And they were like, have you heard B.B. King? What about Etta James? What about, you know, Aretha? What about Katie Lang? What about Bonnie Raitt? And I'd be like, oh, I heard of Bonnie Raitt. But they like really opened the door for me. When I heard B.B. King's Thrill Is Gone, Freddie King, Help Me Through the Day, Albert King, I'll Play the Blues for You, Bonnie Raitt, Something to Talk About, Can't Make You Love Me, yeah, Katie Lang, Busy Being Blue, I was like, my gosh. I mean, I had been listening to Christina and Mariah and Whitney, but none of this other stuff. I had heard Respect, but I was also like, that wasn't something I would go buy because I didn't really know. And then when I got hip to it, I was like, this is my jam.
Yeah, I mean, some of those voices and some of that music, it is, I kind of feel like, I was just thinking about this earlier today. It's like, I feel gypped sometimes as to when I was born because I'm so into that music, mm-hmm, and I missed it by like 30-40 years. As just being in the age where I could go out and see these people performing all the time like it was nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, my dad would talk about Day on the Green up in San Francisco where they would just go, oh, I'm gonna go see Prince, I'm gonna go see Aerosmith, I'm gonna go see this person, that, like Janis Joplin, no big deal, Bob Dylan.
That's wild. Yes.
Yeah, I feel that way often as well.
And you know what? You've been kind of like venturing a lot into the pop world. Do you kind of bring some of that blues background into it? Or do you feel like the pop kind of gets put into a little bit of the blues for you? Like, how do you kind of balance those two? Because those are such contrasting styles.
It's a good question. I would say that I did so much live performing. And as you know, and for anybody who's listening, singing live and singing in the studio are two different things.
Different.
They are night and day.
Yeah.
And having been such a, like, just tearing it down on stage type of a gal, when I started to get into the pop world, the constant feedback was like, you're over singing. Stop over singing. Stop over singing. Stop over singing.
Right.
And just sing the song. Versus like performing live, you can just wail, you can go after it.
Yep.
So really I had to learn what it meant to both sing the song, deliver the song, the intention of the song. And in pop music, it's yes, simple chords, but the melodies, although they are simple, there's intentionality behind every single melody that you hear in a pop song.
Right.
And blues has got a lot more, it's a character, I would say. And you can be loose with it. You can play with it. But in pop music, it's really specific on how it's being sung. I don't know.
Sang, sung. We can take it. We can say both. Yeah,
I would say that there are moments where you'll hear that come out, but it'll be really intentional about how I'm using it.
Now, you said, you know, you touched upon something I was thinking about earlier. You were doing a lot of surfing, and that's, you know, Alex, our mutual friend, he told me like you were on the brink of kind of going pro, like you were doing all kinds of competitions. Like, did you have to shift gears into music? Like, did music take over and did you just kind of like split that pathway, or do you kind of still think about doing both like simultaneously?
I would say that music was my church, surfing was my church. Like, going to the water will always be a part of who I am. But I was like 13, 14 when I was like, am I going to keep surfing or am I going to switch gears into really doing music? And I had always already done music, but I would have had to dedicate my entire whole life strategy to surfing in a major way in order to have any sort of potential to compete. Big time. Right. And I always thought like, well, I could just surf on tour.
Yep, that's so true. And you know what? What's really funny, it's like, as I've been like, you know, I bodyboard all the time and I'm like, I'm always in the water. And like, sometimes I hit breaks with some professional surfers and you hear stories like, we think the music world is corrupt, but the surfer world is super corrupt. Like, how people get paid in surfing is really not really cool. It's like even more corrupt than the music industry. And I never thought I'd ever say that, but you know, it's like they have these competitions and they're endorsed, but it's like the pay structure of like the average professional surfer is, I mean, it's hard to make a living like that. So it's like, I think you made the right financial decision, but it's also, you know, it's sad that something so beautiful like surfing and music are also corrupted by this infiltration of business that kind of takes over something that's so natural and wonderful. That being said, I'm still waiting for the Jadina surfing video with your music and a surfing video. You should definitely.
There is one. There's one. Yeah, it's called.
I gotta see it.
Starts to close in. Yeah, with my friend MJ Ultra. Yeah, it was like a day in the life of, and ended with me surfing in Venice during sunset. It was beautiful.
That's gorgeous. Awesome. I'm gonna have to watch that. Well, let's play something right now. What do you want to play as first?
Let's start with North Star, talking about vision. And this is an actual music video. The intention, this was one of the first singles from the last album, which is called Out of My Shell. North Star is about finding the thing that you go to when life gets rough, and it reminds you of what your path is and where you're going. And it was, you'll see, there's a lot of little fun little things mixed into it. But yeah, let's check it out.
Here's Jadina with North Star.
Take a deep breath in. Find your feet. Breathe it all the way out. Take another deep breath in. Bring honor and dignity to your spine. Breathe out. Strong back, soft front. And close your eyes. Allow your tummy to relax and your breath to flow naturally. What's showing up for you today? Notice your thoughts, feelings, and sensations. As you sift and sort through them like clouds passing in your sky, see the sun setting and twinkle lights appearing. Father sky full of lights. Dear mermaid, where is your North Star? Do you see it? Take a deep breath in. Breathing in all the juiciness, yumminess, and stickiness that life offers. And experience your cells revitalized. Now purposefully, intentionally breathe out your vision all the way across the sky, touching every twinkling star. Across the room, watching it hit the wall. Across and all the way around the world. All the way back into your next deep breath in. See the world ripple with your contribution as your North Star, whether it's behind clouds or not, guides you. What is your purpose? What is your why? Open your eyes. See your North Star. And fly.
Find your North Star. Wherever you are, you never
was cool. Very cool. Very beautiful video. Was that you in the water too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Very awesome. So tell me about a little bit of the story behind A, the dialogue and the vocal and the video.
So, man, a lot of people were lonely during that pandemic.
Yeah.
A lot of people needed to go to different things than they would normally go to, which included meditation, ASMR, videos. And for me, I really wanted to package this album in a way where it was multidimensional, that people could find both a grounding meditation that had music and all of those elements brought together in what I was calling at the time mermaid pop. So the effervescence of like sea foam hitting your face to the powerful tsunami, and like how graceful and powerful and impactful a mermaid can move, and then having that mentality and that mindset. And I felt that in the display of the video, I wanted to mix both. You can always go listen to the song, you can always go listen to the meditation, but I had yet to hear something that weaved them all together in such a way. And
you have a song that's separate and the meditation is separate, and then you combine both of them?
Yeah, I have all three of them. Cool. I have them together as well.
So let me ask you, is the song over the same progression? Like, mm-hmm. That's crazy. So for the video, you have the speaking part. Is that part of a separate track? Like, it's a separate, like, meditation track?
Yeah.
And then the song is over the same progression. Does it have some of the same kind of instrumentation?
I mean, you heard a snippet of the song on the back end of the video.
Right, right. Yeah. That's awesome. That's clever.
Twice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the yin and the yang. I love it. That's very cool.
So if I'm going to sit there and visualize what my North Star is and then open my eyes and then be visually, you know, invited into this world of what somebody else's North Star looks like, it's just, I felt that it was a creative way to meet a lot of the different senses.
Right.
During a post-pandemic world where everybody's like, again, the attention span is very small. And if my intention is to gift them, you know, tools for their life, you know, meditation and guided meditations are a huge part of what people are up to today.
Have you put that on TikTok, that video, or any part of it?
Yeah, I think we have a little nugget from it.
That would really kill on TikTok, because it's like you see so many people gravitating towards those kind of things. I mean, I do it too. When I skim TikTok, I get captivated by like when it's like motivational, inspirational stuff, just like inspirational text that makes you like rethink or revisit something that you may already know. I love stuff like that. And a lot of those videos like are in the millions of views for, you know, for whatever reason. So that was just curious. So tell me, when you're writing something like that, are you going into the studio, like thinking about maybe what you were going through during the pandemic and trying to gear it towards healing? Is like music a very healing process for you as a healer and trying to heal people? Or do you feel like it's the opposite, where like music is healing you and you're seeking the medicine from music?
Well, first thing, I don't think anybody's broken. So I don't think there's anything to heal. I think it's a recovery of the purity, finding who we are beneath the core beliefs that maybe we built up as a child or the trauma that we've been through. But yeah, it's just shedding the layers and the programming and the ego that has been trying to save us and putting us into little boxes. And so for me, this album, Out of My Shell, conceptually, and that's how I work. When it comes to albums, I'll think of an album title and then I'll write the whole album based off the title.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
So Out of My Shell was my own journey of transformation. And transformation always starts with breakdown. There's always something that goes, you know, awry and some spiritual sandpaper happens. And then there's a journey and an arc of what that transformation looks like. And so mermaid mentality, coming out of my shell, it all really wove together beautifully. And there are two meditations on the album itself, and then a little reading from one of my favorite books, Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss.
One of my Spanish teachers in high school gave me that for graduation.
It's a great
book. Love that book.
Yeah. And it's transformational in nature. Another person has called this music affirmational pop music. It's meant to inspire and evoke the greatness that lives within the listener. Wow. I think that so often we have music that we can cry to, we can dance to, we can booty shake to, we can praise God. And I feel like this lane of music where it's actually for the listener to be in their best self, it just doesn't exist. So right. I was like, I'm going to go write that album. Like, I wish I had had my own album while I was going through my transformational journey.
Right.
And I couldn't find much that didn't have anything to do with God.
Interesting.
And not to say that that's good, bad, right, wrong. I'm a believer, but I'm also like, if I want to open the lane for everybody, sometimes in order for people to feel love, you have to remove the stigma. So this does that for me. And yeah, it's just the beginning.
I got a random question for you. I want you to just say yes or no if you've read any of these books, okay? Because these books are like right on par. These are some of my favorite books too. Have you read Celestine Prophecy?
Yes.
Have you read Power of Now?
Of course.
Have you read The Alchemist?
Of course.
Way of the Peaceful Warrior?
Yes.
My favorite is The Prophet. Have you read The Prophet?
Oh,
that's my favorite. That,
I mean,
that book.
Marriage and Love?
Yes, yes.
Literally, yeah. Like.
I got chills. Yeah.
So good.
The Prophet is one of my favorite books. Okay, just I had to ask some of those because those are like my Bibles when it comes
to. Well, since we're playing that game, I'm going to throw one right back at you.
Please.
Have you read The Third Door?
No.
Okay.
No.
So my label started based off reading the book The Third Door by Alex Bunyan.
Okay.
It's about, have you ever heard of the nightclub analogy?
No.
Okay. So yes. Imagine the music industry is a nightclub. Mm-hmm. And this is not the analogy I'm applying it to the music business. So the music business is the nightclub. The first way to get in is general admission. Super long line. You're going to wait. You possibly will never get in. 90% of people wait in that line. Then you have like the 5 to 8, 9% that are going to slip in the VIP door, which is door number two. Your friend's uncle is the promoter. You have a hot song out so you can slip in the side. You paid a bunch of money to get in. You know, that's the VIP door. The third door is you run down the alleyway. You like hang out at just the right time where the chef opens the kitchen door. You slip into the thing and then you end up in the club.
Right.
So I read The Third Door and it's all about maximizing exponential opportunities, like saying yes at the right time and the right intersection to the right people and then getting in the room.
Right.
So my idea was that I'm going to take the third door and once I'm in the music industry, open a fourth door for transformational artists. So if you've never read The Third Door,
don't
blow your mind.
That's awesome. That is a lot of my philosophy because I have had experiences like that where it's like, I've met Paul McCartney or Prince or Stevie Wonder, and it's like because of those circumstances. So I'm a firm believer in that third door already. So I love it. That's awesome.
It's what are we gonna epic?
And have you read the Four Seasons? Is that the
Four Agreements?
Four Agreements. Yes, that's another good one too. The one the book that's next on deck for me of all those is it's not really in the same genre, but Love in the Time of Cholera. Have you read that? That's mm-hmm. on deck. I want to read that. I've heard great things about that.
Another good one, The Big Leap.
I don't know that one either. The Big Leap.
Woo!
No, I don't know that.
Genius. That guy, he's from another planet.
You're going to have to text me these, The Third Door and The Big Leap. I'm going to try and remember. But for right now, what are we going to play next?
All right. So let's play Messy. And I'll tee up the messy of messiness. Vulnerability has been a stretch for me. Sometimes I think I'm being vulnerable and I'm not, and I don't know that I'm not being vulnerable. I've had that lovingly pointed out to me, but yeah, like the idea of being vulnerable is the willingness to be hurt. And when we have people like Brené Brown with number one Netflix specials about vulnerability and researching shame, it's all over the place of like, man, vulnerability can really be messy. It can be really challenging and it can feel wildly uncomfortable to somebody who, you know, is a recovering perfectionist or, you know, messes up, puts her foot in her mouth, you know, says the wrong thing at the wrong time, gets offended. So for me, writing a song that was like, listen, everything's falling down on me and I like it. I'm just fall in love with the breakdown. It's a yes moment. It's a like, and I do it imperfectly. And I just felt like so many people in my sphere, especially in the transformational space, was like, dude, breakdowns are so hard. And I'm like, yeah, they are. And like, can we, is there some way to love it, to fall in love with like being comfortable in the uncomfortable? And so I wrote my
song. I think vulnerability is actually strength. So it's like, I think you have to embrace that messiness. So I love totally. It. Here's Jadina with Messy.
Not putting makeup on today, won't be doing my hair. Leave my phone at home on purpose. Close that loop, get in the booth, and let my soul shine. Giving my light, yeah, it's my purpose, on purpose. I really don't, no, I really don't care, no. I really don't, no, I really don't care. No, I really don't care. No, I really don't, really don't. No, I really don't care.
Very cool. Tell me a little bit about the concept of the video.
I wanted every woman in the world who struggles with perfectionism to have somebody in their ear, like literally in their ear on their scrunchie, like singing to them, like, hey, it's okay. Today's rough. You're not going to be on time and it's cool.
I feel like women go through so much more than men do, just on the whole, just like the cattiness of women to other women, the competition, the unfairness, the kind of stereotypes, all of it. And that's why I think women are also way stronger in a lot of ways than men in so many ways, because they give birth, they deal with more bullshit, and yet they always make any room feel lighter. You know what I mean? It's like, that's power to me. It's like, I don't think any guys ever really understand what kind of strength and power that really is, you know? So it's kind of cool that you write a song that's like nurturing that. Tell me a little bit about that process. When did you have that realization as a woman as to like knowing the power of vulnerability or just letting go? Man, we're getting some deep questions. I like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the intention by the music is that there's this level of depth that's available to anybody, anytime. I get to be careful of like not always living in this world and like being playful and fun and light because it can be so yummy to really get to know people on an intimate level. And it takes bravery and courage to actually open the vest. And it isn't what we walk around with. For the most part, that's not how we walk around. We're talking about the weather. We're talking about the business deal. We're not talking about like, hey, how's your heart? So yeah. I would say that this journey of vulnerability will forever be part of what I'm up to. You know, I think grace is a concept that I have yet to fully understand and will be in forever discovery of the curiosity of what it means to be in receipt of and living in grace. I agree with you. Vulnerability is a superpower. Mm-hmm. And I think.
And yet society makes it feel like it's not. That's the irony.
Well, I would say that it depends on what society you grew up in. Like my experience is we grew up in a country where masculinity or the absence of masculinity had men become really, really stepped on in a lot of ways, and that women were acknowledged for wearing the pants and being independent and powerful and, you know, oh man, she's intimidating walking into a room. And I think that what we identify as masculine and feminine energy has been really wonky and not clear in a lot of ways. And I think that women have been acknowledged for being women have been acknowledged by other women for being strong and powerful, but then there's this negative connotation with like being soft and being gentle and being in the receiving and the allowing. It somehow gets tied in with like weakness. And so I could walk into a room confidently and stand in front of a room and sing in front of everybody. And that was one of the masks I wore.
Right.
And so being able to take off that mask and be like, yo, I actually have no idea what's happening right now. And I'm really scared and I really don't know what to say. And like, I'm triggered and I'm unclear and like, I don't have it all together and I don't know what to do. And when I was willing to say that instead of making somebody wrong or judging them or pushing them or being aggressive, and requesting support, like really saying like, I actually have no idea, that I found community and found family and found home when I was willing to be vulnerable. And I know that there are so many other women like me on their journey, returning back to the innocence and the sweetness and the softness and the notion that it is okay to be safe with me and only me. And therefore the world is also a safe place to just be.
Right. Do you feel like, because I've always felt like singing is that direct line for me to be vulnerable. So it's like you just put your soul out there, like when you're performing or in the studio. And I think that it's a lot of reasons why I'm very confident, because you're constantly exercising that vulnerability. You're putting it out there and you know, kind of displaying it in a way to get comfortable with that vulnerability. Do you find that there's a difference between the emotional vulnerability and like you as a performer, and how does that connect and disconnect?
Totally. I would say that music one-on-one alone in my bedroom is a really vulnerable place for me. Music is a love language for me. It's how I emote. It's how I connect. But when I'm performing,
it's business.
It's a different beast. It's a different animal. It's a different. Yeah. And not to say that that's always true, which is, you know, what I'll say is I wrote a country album and I've never written a country album. And I feel like my soul is in this album. Like, hello. And it feels really vulnerable. Like it's the most connected to me album that I've written. Everything has always been nuanced and in service of. So this album this country album is like, oh gosh, this is really vulnerable. You know, like that feels really vulnerable. So
that's good.
Which is great. And it's awesome because I'm allowing myself to be really opening that cage, you know? And so when I sing music, some specific music, I actually feel that level of like, oh, this is so, you know, I have to stop myself from crying. But that's not always been true for me. It's been a, you know, performance. It's been performative. It's been in service to, it's been work.
Right. Let me ask you a random question. Like for this country album, are you going to make CDs or is it all going to be digital? Because I'm asking this for myself because I've always made CDs. I've even made vinyl on the last record. I don't know if I'm going to make CDs anymore. It just doesn't make any sense. But
I'm not there yet.
But when I go,
I'm not fleshed out. I am with this project.
Okay. All right. Well,
for someone like me who knows everything on what I'm going to do from beginning to end, to not have that piece like solidified, part of me is immediately like, I'm going to make a short run of records and it's going to be like 100 records and that's it. And maybe it'll be like a care package. The album will come in a care package, like for each listener, because those 100 are going to be like babies, you know, like there'll be like a scarf or like a, it'll be like a care package because anybody who's going to listen to this album is going to need some fucking love.
I like that. Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
So at the end of the album, Out of My Shell, I take the listener on a journey into becoming their own giant. And I believe there's a giant within every single one of us. And it just gets to be highlighted and brought to life. And it could be that you're a bus driver and you're the most gangster bus driver on the planet, or you could be a mom that is a stay-at-home mom of one or five kids. Like, you're a giant in whatever you're doing. You absolutely are a giant, and there's nobody suited better than you to be doing it. And so I wrote this song Giant as a way to remind people, like, you're big and you're beautiful and you're powerful and don't forget it.
Here's Jadina with Giant.
I remember being small, not having a voice, just whispers against walls. I was all alone, figured it out all on my own, wondering what it would be like to be tall, wondering what it would be like to be tall. In my heart, and now I'm home. I burned the whole ceiling apart. I'm a giant. Second guess what I know is true, even if it fails their test. No, I want my vision proud, invisible cape like yes. Empowering doesn't have to be loud. Empowering doesn't have to be loud. So scream out, now I've flown. The ceiling's gone and no longer small. I'm a giant, giant. I have standing shoulder to shoulder with them all. Giant, giant. I have standing shoulder to shoulder with them all. I'm a giant, giant. I have standing shoulder to shoulder with them all.
Tell me a little bit about the concept of when you were writing that.
It was a moment for sure. Becoming a CEO of a record label in an industry, in my experience, is dominated by men.
Right.
To the flip side of what we were saying before, that like, I'm actually not small in any way, shape, or form. I am worthy. I am equal. I am humble to learn and hungry to learn, but also I am not little. And so standing shoulder to shoulder, like I can hold my own and so can you in any conversation that you're in. It brought me to tears while I was listening to that, just thinking about the women of Iran and how many giants I've seen over the past couple of months, just listening to their stories and how big and brave they are to be willing to stand and stand for their families and knowing the consequences. It takes courage to be a giant. It takes courage to say, I'm actually going to own my voice, own my power. I'm one of those women that doesn't have a problem owning my power, owning my voice, owning my worth. Especially in the workplace, especially in public. But in private, I've definitely had my journey of like, how do I communicate my needs and communicate them nicely and effectively? And there are women that have zero voice, none. Mm-hmm. They have no idea how to say what they need. And so I think of women that are stepping into their power. And this
where do you think that comes from? What do you think that comes from? Like you said something really interesting, like, when you're by yourself, you finding that voice is hard?
Yeah, I would say that like personally in intimate relationships, in love relationships where, I would also say I'm a recovering anxious attachment. So like, if you know what that means, you know what that means. Right. That like not fawning or people pleasing or bending into a pretzel so that someone won't leave because of attachment wounds or abandonment stuff, like, that I'm actually like, good. If you want to leave, that's okay.
Right.
I don't need you to stay. So yeah.
It's interesting. That's power. And it's also, maybe it's like, you know, there's a little bit of like a twist of confidence and a twist of fear, just like kind of rolled into one, which I think, you know, I think Chris Martin once said, every singer-songwriter, every singer in any, you know, any leader of any musical entity is right on the cusp of complete total confidence and complete insecurity, you know, like just ready to shatter and ready to take on the world at the exact same time. And maybe that's kind of like how we all are at some level, but maybe artists feel that vulnerability and feel that imposter syndrome sometimes, and also feel that absolute confidence for having gone through what they go through just to create. So it's an interesting, you know, conversation to, we'll have to extrapolate that more. We recently collaborated. You sang on my new Blues Trio record on a John Mayer Trio cover. Had you heard that song before? No.
No.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite songs and you killed it. You came in and just, you slayed it. And I haven't even updated with you with it, but We are just about to mix everything. We edited everything. So we're just about to mix it and we're going to release it. And I'm on the brink of when we're going to do CD. If we're going to do CDs, I kind of want to, and I kind of don't at the same time. It's like, you know, what's the, you know, atmosphere of the music industry now. So now what's next for you? What are you playing out? Are you working towards this country album? Like, what's the next step for you?
The next step is growing the business, the label itself. I am also manifesting, creating, asking God for who this producer of this country album is going to be. I have an artist showcase at Hotel Cafe on March 8th. So if you want to come check it out, it'll be fun. I'll be playing that night. Thank you, Neon Owl, for inviting me. And the last thing I'll say on what we were talking about before and also being on your record is that it's humbling. Right. Although we're on the precipice of like complete and total confidence taking over the world and completely shattering, like, I think for me, it's just continually remembering that I am just a humble servant to this beautiful space of creation, and that this is part of the way that God has designed my body to be in service to this generation of people. And I think, like what we started the conversation with about it being for the kids, like, this is for them. Like, right. Thinking about 2050, I'm thinking about year 2100, like, how will our children look at this world? How will our children see this planet? My ancestors, your ancestors, all of us are being like guided to create a better world for them. And will there be a world for them to be in? Right. And just being a humble servant to the best of my abilities day in and day out, no matter what sort of art creation I'm up to.
I love that. Well, I can't wait to see you on March 8th. I've also been doing these Hotel Cafe singer-songwriter sessions in the round, songwriters in the round. I'll have to have you on one of those. So
let's do it.
I'll have to book you. I'll book you after your show on the 8th, but I'll have to have you on board. Where can people find you online, and where can people find you on social media?
At IamJadina, IamGedina, on my website, jadina.com. Drop me a line, say hi. I do love having some fun on Instagram occasionally. So drop in, say hi.
Awesome. Well, Jadina, thank you so much for being a guest again on Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to have to have you back in about 9 or 10 months.
Let's see
what's going on with your country record and whatnot. But lots of love, lots of light to you. You are always just a beacon of love, affection, music, and soul. So we wish you well, and we'll have to catch some waves soon. Let's catch some waves soon. Let's make more waves in the studio and go catch some waves in the ocean.
Yes. Deal.
All right.
Thank you for having me. Love you all.
Of course. On behalf of Jadina, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys here next week. Take care of yourselves.
Later.
Peace and love.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.